Hi, I'm Mary Wilson, and today is October 19th, 2020, in the midst of the pandemic that is ongoing and changing our lives in many ways. I'm interviewing today my friend Kristen Galli. And Kristen, would you share what type of ministry you have and have had in the past years?
Yes, I'm Kristen Galli, and I am a professional interim minister. I am ordained with the United Church of Christ and have full standing with the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. I have served a number of churches with the Disciples and about three churches with the United Church of Christ. I've also served as interim in two congregations that were Presbyterian Church USA, PCUSA.
Okay. So Disciples, UCC, and Presbyterian.
Yes. And I also actually did one short interim, was sort of finishing up another interim with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the ELCA.
I was going to say, in my mind, there was a Lutheran church in somewhere.
And okay. So I keep in touch with a lot of, with the mailings from Bishop Mike Reinhart, who is the Bishop of the Gulf Coast Synod. Which is sort of the eastern side of Texas, you know, with Houston and into Louisiana. So one thing which might be of interest to this study is as the pandemic was sort of winding up, as people were starting to consider closing and then how to close, and churches, buildings, you know, all these different standards and suggestions, it was actually often the Bishop Mike, the Lutherans, who would send out something first, and then the Disciples would be the next day, and then the UCC and the Presbyterians sometime later. And in fact, often what I started doing then was taking some of that information and forwarding on to my contacts with especially the UCC and the PCUSA, like Campbell Lovett in the conference office, South Central Conference office, and Lynn Hargrove, who's the with the PCUSA in the greater Houston area, the New Covenant Presbyterian. So I started sharing some of that.
That's interesting.
So things like building care and the things about aerosols and singing. Then even I think it was Bishop Mike first who said, okay, we're starting to hear that ministers are really burnt out because, you know, they made it through Lent, they made it through Easter, they didn't have a break after Easter. And then, you know, by May and June, you know, you were starting to hear that ministers were like, I haven't had a break, I haven't had a vacation. He said, make sure and take care of yourself. And then the next day I got a similar email from the Disciples. And then it was about that time that it started really hitting the news too. That some of the news lines were saying, hey, this is getting to be a problem. So anyway, it was interesting of these sort of four mainline denominations that I'm have some communications with.
Well, yeah, that definitely gives you a broader perspective, I think, probably than most of the folks that I've talked to who are, you know, very focused on their specific congregation. You can see the communication going on all across the state in a lot of different ways.
Right.
What is your sense of things now and how people are doing come October? It's been 7 months.
Yeah. So the other thing that has happened is that I was working at a downtown church in Austin as interim. I started there in September of 2019. Okay. And they were going through a change in bylaws as well as their pastor having just retired. So part of my job was to help them get through the new bylaws and elect, you know, the people from the congregation to new positions and have that appointed. And their voting year and budget year is from July to June. So I had until the end of June to get everything in line for the new leadership that would start July 1, right?
Right, right.
So that meant doing some identity work and some studies about, they had already had the bylaws passed, but what it would mean tangibly to enact those. We were doing, you know, monthly activities. I'd made some presentations to some of the main leadership in October and November. We took December off. We had congregational meetings on Sundays, on, you know, one Sunday in January and in February, and had others planned.
Sure you did.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So, and on that, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but so it was a struggle then with, I'll say in mid-March, March 13th, Friday the 13th, I had a Zoom meeting with, there was four of us online that we had already pre-established. If there was anything important emergency-wise that needed to be made, a decision that needed to be made, it would be the senior, myself, the associate pastor, the board chair, and the upcoming board chair. Us four would be the four people that would make that instant decision.
Right.
So we met on Friday and decided it's hot enough. We need to move to online worship starting the 15th, Sunday the 15th.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the associate and I met on Saturday and said, okay, you do this, I'll do this, and we'll get together later on in the day and put it together. Yeah, everything went crazy. It was, we had to transition to online board meetings through Zoom, those kind of things, and get all the nominations and appointments made by, that could be approved in June meetings. And in the meantime, they were searching for their next installed pastor because, you know, I was the interim. They did go ahead and push that forward with all guns as well, and they were fortunate. They did find someone who was willing to say, yes, I'll pick up and move to Austin in the midst of pandemic.
Yeah.
And so my contract did end at the end of 12 months, which had been the original plan. So as of the end of September. So during that time, my point on this is that during that time, during the last number of months, I've also been in search. So not only have, you know, I've had this listening into the other denominations, I've actually been talking with other churches as they're in search and trying to figure out what they're going to do next, how they're doing worship next, how their pastors are doing. And I know one church that I talked to as far as possibly doing an interim, it was, and I can't speak for the last pastor, but left suddenly. Left in an unplanned way, shall we say, during the pandemic. I sort of that impression of, okay, I'm out. And I've been hearing in the news that there at least are pastors that are saying, I'm done with this. There's too much change.
Wow.
So I, you know, as I say, I don't know that for certain, but I'm starting to get a sense that there is some of that. There's some pastors that are like, I was close to retiring. I was tired. I can do this online thing. I'm going to keep going for a little longer. But there's some that are saying, this is too much change. And I wasn't trained to do this, which none of us were. And it's hard. I know that I've talked to some colleagues that are very uncomfortable doing the in-person worship, and yet the church leadership, of as far as the volunteer elected leadership, is so anxious to be in person, you know, face to face, even singing without mask and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it's tough for the pastor. And of course, there's plenty of news stories, you know, even in Houston, which I'm close enough to Houston, and I have someone staying with me that has a subscription to the Houston newspaper, that, you know, if people get sick, there are incidences where it's the pastor that gets it the worst and dies. And we as pastors know that.
Right. I mean, there's not a risk-free way to meet in person.
Right.
That seems clear to me, but
So it's a tough place to be in. It's a really interesting time to be looking to, because like Even during the summer, I was talking with a, I was interviewing with a church that was meeting with the worship team, and limited amount of the congregation was meeting, as well as another group that was meeting in their sanctuary space at a different point in time during the day. And there was singing going on. And we had done one interview with, at least one interview on Zoom. I got contacted and was asked if I would drive down for a face-to-face interview. And I had originally agreed to that. And the numbers in that town were very low. And then the week beforehand, they started spiking really high because it was a vacation spot too.
Right.
And it was right after Labor Day. And so I talked to the search chair and asked her about it. And she said, well, yeah, the numbers are crazy because, you know, all those vacationers came in, but we're doing okay. Oh yeah, our music director had COVID, but we got the building cleaned and you're still coming down to meet in our building, right? Because we really want to show you our building. And I was like, I would feel more comfortable if let's do one more by Zoom. And she was disappointed, but arranged for that to happen. And she said, well, the rest of us will all be at the building. Well, in the actual interview, nobody was in the building. So it wasn't just me that felt uncomfortable with that.
Right.
Or seemed to find it easier, shall we say, to do the interview by Zoom. They did decide to go in a different direction. I think for a number of different reasons, not just that. Probably there were some other things going on. So I can't say that that was the only reason why I didn't get the job. But, you know, it's, do you take a job or you try and keep yourself alive? And for me, that's not a mild thing in that I'm a mild asthma sufferer.
Right.
And so, you know, and I'm prone to pneumonia anyway. So a disease like that, I feel like would be difficult for my system.
Sure. So it sounds like, without trying to read people's minds that I've never met, that there may be some differences of opinion within that leadership as to how to proceed
right
now anyway. So, yeah. Well, so how is the search going beyond that? I mean, are you in conversation with anyone that looks like it may turn into something, or is it just?
I have, and I'm looking off to the side here because I put another screen over here because I wanted to have some notes for myself. So 1, 2, 3. I've been in conversation with 8 churches. There's 3 that have said specifically no, and there's 2 that are probably leaning that direction about probably not.
Okay.
Just because of my hesitation of
meeting in person
as much.
Wow.
And I've said that, look, I don't mind, you know, coming in and meeting leadership and, you know, doing some social distancing leadership, but, you know, I have some, you know, we would at least need to talk about what this would look like. So we'll see. We'll see. But it is a different, and also to say that, you know, some of these are interims and some are, there's been a couple that are permanent, because I mean, my first call was a permanent installed. And then after that, I've done a lot of either interims and have really felt a call to doing that interim work of helping people through transition times.
Yeah.
Sort of that. And I've also done some chaplaincy work too in the hospital and with hospice work of helping people through crisis. So by doing interim work, it's sort of helping a whole congregation that's going through a transition and crisis. Right. And people in general don't like change. And so, and churches, we like to have our safe, comfortable spot. So it is a definite call to say, I will help you through this. You will make it through this. You will not only survive, but if we do this right, you'll have a better sense of yourself and you'll not just survive, but thrive. So that's what I tend to do. But I have, part of me has said, well, maybe it would be nice to have some stability and be planted someplace, but this is not, this is a crazy time to be looking for that type of call in a sense.
Well, right. But if churches are looking for interims, they're also looking for permanent.
Yes, as well. Yes.
And that's the thing. I mean, I know I know church is in transition right now as well.
And
so it strikes me that even though we have this, you know, worldwide pandemic that we're in the middle of and don't have an end in sight, that there's a part of life that just continues. Just change pastors and go through things. And now we just have this on top of it. So are you seeing a spike in changes, a spike in ministers stepping down?
I don't think so yet. And hopefully it won't be, but I'm in a sense, I'm watching for that because I mean, there was already talk about sort of the demographics of ministers and to congregations and that there might be, more retirements going on.
I've
always listened to that with a little grain of salt because 19 years ago when I graduated from seminary, they were saying that at that time. And, you know, I never saw that there was an imbalance there. So I'm not sure. But I do know that all the way around, there are stresses on the system. And some of that stress is with the pastors and saying, as far as leading through change, and some is with the congregations. With the church that I was at, I think we were able to transition pretty well to saying, to keeping worship going, and also some of the leadership groups and fellowship groups. Mm-hmm. So we started in March, as I say, first with Zoom, and we probably did that for about 3 weeks, and that church, the congregation was used to a more formal service. And so for them, we ended up transferring to YouTube and also to pre-recorded. And that way we could have the different pieces of the worship service pre-recorded, not only by myself and my associate, but also by the different roles in the church that were usually a worship leader or liturgist, elders at the table, praying for the communion elements and, blessing the offering and musicians and things like that. So all those pieces could be pre-recorded by different people, dumped into a common drive, and we had a volunteer that could knit those together. So we had a worship service that at least felt similar, comfort-wise, similar to what it had been. It wasn't in the sanctuary, but it was almost more than if we had been in the sanctuary, because if we'd been in the sanctuary, it would be echoey. The volume wouldn't be right. We couldn't have as many people. You couldn't have the singing because it is a church that's in the middle of the university campus. They're very familiar with studies and science and realistic things. And, they aren't going to just ignore that. So I think we were able to put together a good worship experience, as good as it could be online. Also, already they were having a lot of their donations mailed in, and they already had the setup to do electronic giving. It just hadn't been stressed yet, but
we
had already been dabbling in it. Not only could they give online, but they also have a service that you could do the text giving. So that, especially if there's a special offering, like we had set it up for even before Easter. So that like, if you wanted to buy your Easter lily, you could do it by text. So it could be broadcast in the service. We're having a special offering for this denominational group or this whatever, or for flowers. And you could just text it in.
Impulse buying, huh?
What's that?
Impulse buying, huh?
Exactly. Impulse buying. Exactly. Because I was like, especially after, I think it was in January, we had someone talking about the special offering and saying, okay, you guys need to get out your checkbooks and write the check. And I was like, oh, most people in this congregation don't carry checks. So we really pushed to make that change already. So by going into the pandemic time, it was just, in our recorded pieces talking about, you can give online, you can give this way. And so actually the offerings were coming in on the regular basis. The only difference was is that that church had come to rely some on some rental income, which right. wasn't coming in the same way.
Sure.
But they're going to be okay. But not all churches are. And so like some of the churches that I've even done preliminary interviews with that haven't gone much further, I've said, look, there are some things that I've been able to give them some ideas. And I'm the kind of person that I would rather share more ideas, even if it's not, even if it's not a long-term relationship that I'm going to have with them. So like, for instance, also I know two churches that I'm involved with that have used a different service for doing the being able to listen to the service even if you don't have a screen, which for the church that I was at, we just continued to show the YouTube service on Zoom.
Yeah,
because on Zoom you can still phone in and have a phone line that you can phone in. And there's also another service, I think Twilio, where you can basically buy a dedicated phone line, and then for like pennies per person kind of thing, you can set up a phone line that they can call in and listen to that service. So I know it, so I shared that information with a couple churches that were like, oh, we didn't know how, you know, and if,
if you've
got an older congregation that they don't have a screen or they don't have a smartphone and all they have a flip phone or a landline, you know, they're very disconnected and it's very difficult, which then creates the push to, we have to get back together. There's other options.
Yeah. It's a challenging time for sure to figure out how to, one, have a meaningful service, and two, have people feel connected. What do you think worked in the congregation you were in last that helped people feel connected to one another?
Well, some of the things that really helped is because what they did do is they'd had the basic Zoom program for a while, but what they did is they upped it so that you could have different accounts under the same auspice. So each of the Sunday school classes and the book study class and you know, some other things had their own dedicated, you know, portion. So there was two classes in specific that said they started having a larger attendance because they had some older members that weren't driving anymore. And so hadn't been coming. And so, but they could now attend, and they were delighted to be able to see their old friends again. There was actually a larger attendance in worship because there were friends who had moved away that realized, oh, I can go to church here again. And plus I know that there were some people who were sending their links to friends and family of saying, hey, come see what we're doing here. Yeah. So it might not always be on that Sunday morning at 10:45, which was their worship time. And they would start it at 10:45. Some churches will just go ahead and post it whenever it's available. What that church did was say it's going to premiere at that time, and then it's available on YouTube after that. And so, so you know, we could watch the statistics and the demographics on that, is that people would start to watch on Sunday, and then over Monday and Tuesday, and even some on Wednesday, the viewership would go up. And then after Wednesday, nobody else watched it. If you put all that together, there was a lot, there was more people that were watching it than would have been in the sanctuary. And then when you count, which I figured was valid, when you would say that maybe even if only half of those people or a third of those people had more than one person watching a screen, then that would really bring it up. So actually, I think the, you know, if you do some things like that of saying, we've got a quality service here and ways to connect. And there were still advertising, you know, book studies and social gatherings. There was a social hour that was just basically a happy hour that they would have one evening a week of saying, you know, we don't have an agenda here. Just, you know, grab a drink of anything and come socialize with us. The choir continued their meeting, not to sing together, but to socialize and chat together, because choirs tend to be a very tight group. So I think that was doing well. The other thing that was doing well was that they were starting to plan with technology to continue doing this. Even though this church was in the middle of the university campus, they didn't have good equipment in the sanctuary for either Wi-Fi or they didn't have any video screens or anything like that. They had a good sound system. They had recently had the sound system really worked on, and the sound system was good and beautiful organ, all that kind of stuff. And when I had started there, I had thought, oh, well, this would be something I'd like to get them to sort of up their game on before I'm out. And a couple leaders had said, oh, don't even try. They have no interest in having screens, and you know, they like what they're doing, and that's fine. And so it was with a certain amount of amusement that it was either in April or May that the board passed approved, I think it was like $10,000 to put different screens stuff in the sanctuary. And they were going to be on stands and movable. So there would be in three different parts in the sanctuary, because it's one of these long sanctuaries, so that everybody could see. But then if there was going to be a special event or a wedding or something where they didn't want the screens to mess up the view of their sanctuary, those could be rolled out and they could be used for other events. And I was just like, okay, I'm amused now. There was, and I didn't, it wasn't even me that brought that proposal forward. It was just, we know we need to do this because people are really enjoying this online experience and we want to be able to continue it in addition to meeting in person when we're able to. So there is this sense of there's things that are changing, and what can we skim off the top as far as the good changes that we can carry over into that next era.
I get a sense at this point from the interviews I've done that every congregation is seeing that there are some changes that are going to be possibly permanent ones. And a creativity that they've tapped into that could also be permanent and good. Despite the frustrations of some of this. Well, I do want to back up. We jumped right into the pandemic topic and all this. And I actually usually start these interviews with getting some background on the minister herself.
Okay.
And so I want to go back and talk more about you, and your story, your life story, and things that have shaped you and brought you to where you are today. What are some of those catalytic events in your life, I guess, is one way to phrase it.
There's always so much. Don't ask a pastor to start talking on such a broad topic. So as a child, I was in a family that had drifted away from the church. So I have memories of not being in church. But then a grandfather that came and lived with us, and both sets of grandparents were the kind of, when they came for a visit, you found a church to visit. And when grandpa came to live with us for a while, we found a church to attend. And that was in Austin. And that was when I was in about junior high type age. And so not only did I find a church home there and have a memory of that, but also found some really good friends. Family friends, a whole family of friends, you know, the parents were friends and the kids were friends too. And, I also have memories of, and he was a minister. He was actually on conference staff and,
with the nomination,
with the United Church of Christ, South Central Conference. He was the associate conference minister when the conference was big enough to have not only a conference minister, but two associates.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So anyway, and so I remember him referring to stories in the Bible as if I should know them, like, oh, you know, like the prodigal son, and me having no clue of what he was talking about. So, and feeling, you know, unnerved by that. So I try to remember that in a sense, so that as now as a grown, not only as a grown up, but a minister saying, you know, there are people that won't know our churchy language and won't know our code phrases. So with, as again, the daughter in that family was my age. And so when she would say, so are you going to come to Sunday school? I was like, sure. Are you going to come to confirmation? Sure. Are you going to go to church camp? at Slumber Falls. Sure, you know, having no clue of what I was getting into, but those were very shaping experiences. So especially like church camp and stuff. Confirmation was very important to me since I was in a new junior high, that, you know, I was the awkward junior high student, and that was one place that I could ask all the questions and really explore, and it was great. Church camp was great too, because there were adults that were very supportive and friends along the way. So also I had a summer job in a sense. My first summer out of high school, it was summer adult leadership leadership training, the SALT program, which you may be familiar with now, Mary, but at the time it was in congregations, not in the campground, which it is now. So I was actually matched with a congregation and a minister, and who let me sort of explore what leadership in the church would be like. At the time, I thought, well, I enjoy hanging out at church, and I'll see what it's like to be a more active lay leader. And by the end of that summer, I was going, huh, maybe there's a call here. I went to college, met someone who was not interested in church, and married too young, and had a couple kids, and sort of drifted away from that for a while. But as things were starting to get rocky there, and I was trying to figure out, okay, what am I really supposed to be doing with my life? That call came back really strong. So I started in the licensed ministry program in the state of Iowa, where I happened to be living at the time, and did a year of that program before that marriage did fall apart, and I was able to move back to Texas, move in with my parents even for a couple of years as an adult, and in my 30s, and went back to school, went to seminary at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary, and I lived with my parents for 2 years and had them help, and then was able to get another grant and move on to campus. And so my kids got the experience too of being friends with other kids their age who had these silly adults who were going back to school and and you know, play on the playground that was right outside my apartment window there, and and things like that. So so yeah, it was a little bit of a long road, and part of it was, do I really want to do this? And finally realizing that God was going to keep after me. That call kept coming back to me. And once I said yes, especially like when I was in Iowa, once I put my house on the market and said, yes, I am making this move, everything started coming together really fast. As I described in one message at one point, it felt like that scene in Mary Poppins where, you know, the kids are riding on the merry-go-round and then the horses jump off the merry-go-round and start racing across the field. And I felt like I was going, okay, I'm coming as fast as I can, kind of thing. There was a lot of affirmation in that, of things that were happening around me, but also people that were affirming me during that time.
That would not be the same thing as suggesting that it was easy.
It was not easy. So it was a struggle along the way. It was a struggle. I looked at three different seminaries, and that was the one in Austin was the one that really spoke to me in a lot of ways. Seminary was not easy either, but in some ways it was such a wonderful, it was like sort of pulling up to a feast of, as an adult, returning to school and being able to really dig into things that were fascinating. Even the hardest class that I was in, that I had to struggle to get my B in, it was still good. It was still really good.
When we stop recording, you can tell me which class that was.
Yeah. and it was great. And I still, you know, we'll refer back to some of the things in that class. So I really enjoyed, I should say, I really loved being in seminary. And I sort of would get frustrated with some of the students that felt like, oh, well, I just have to check this off so I can go ahead to the real work of being a minister. And for me, I just realized that this was a feast of taking in all that good stuff, of packing it away in your lunch basket or in your tool chest, because knowing that I would have to be unpacking it for a long time. As I finished up,
let me ask you one thing. Did your grandfather, who had come to live with you when you were younger, was he alive when you went to seminary?
No, none of them were.
I was wondering.
But Yeah, if you'll allow me to go off on a little bit of a
Yeah,
tangent
please.
here. What I actually had to do was finish up my bachelor's first before starting
Oh,
seminary. So I
okay.
did that at St. Edward's, and part of it I did through what's called their New College Program, which is for silly adults finishing up their degree. And so it was in English and in religion. And part of it was with their new college program, you could look at if you could look at a course description and say, I already have learned all this, and here's the
Oh.
essays, and here I can justify why I've already know this topic, and have it re and then submit that and have it reviewed by a professor in that topic, and say, yes, she already knows that, she doesn't have to take the course. We'll call it a pass. I did that for a number of courses because I was a
Wow.
re returning adult. I did it actually for seven, which was a big chunk. I had to turn in a
No
huge
kidding.
binder, but it helped me get done quicker.
Yeah,
And
that's
it
almost a
was,
year's worth of courses.
yeah, it
Wow.
was, yeah, almost, yeah. So I was really struggling to get all that done, and on a time frame that would put me into seminary that next fall, which was what I wanted. And so I had a deadline there, and I was struggling with that, but I got it done. And in com about that same time, I was also in conversation mildly with a congregation that another grandfather from my past, a great great grandfather from my past, that we had been doing some genealogy studies, and I was still on the mailing list from this other church, and I had seen on their church newsletter that they had a scholarship program that they didn't have anybody to give it to, and they were going to just retire it or something. And I called up the pastor who I'd met, and I said, "Pastor Dan, I have an idea for that scholarship program. I'd like to apply for that." And he said, "Sure, I'd be happy to put your name forward for that. It's not going to be very much, just a couple hundred dollars." I said, "Hey, that would really mean so much to me as far as getting books and just feeling like there was an affirmation from this connection from my past." Well, the day that I got everything turned in and was like, "Phew, that's done," it was only a couple weeks after that phone conversation in which the pastor had told me it's probably going to take a couple months to do because you know how churches work. It was like 2 or 3 weeks later, I got home, went to the mailbox, and there was a letter and a check giving me that scholarship and that money. And I felt like it was these ancestors from my past just sort of patting me on the back and encouraging me on. So it was lovely.
And as it turns out, pastors need affirmation.
Yes.
I'm really I'm so glad you shared that story. That's great.
The other part is that on my mother's side, well, on both sides actually, but there's pastors in on both sides of my family. But on my mother's father and her stepfather, the grandfather that I knew, who had been friends in seminary, both of them had a love of ancient Greek. The biblical Greek, Koine Greek, and I have a couple of their Bibles of my natural grandfather's Greek testaments, and a study one where he has his handwriting and his study notes from it. And while I was in seminary, I met this rather attractive Greek tutor. And I brought one of those in to show Dr. Alsop, who was our Greek professor, but also this Greek tutor that I was interested in, and used it as a way to woo him, and he is now my husband. So,
Who also is a pastor and who I have also interviewed for this project.
So my kids especially and other people think it's really amusing that I used a Greek Bible to entice someone to be interested in me.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say there's probably not too many similar stories out there.
Hey, I'll work with what I got.
There you go. So, how long now have you been a pastor or minister? 19 years, is it?
19 years.
Yeah.
I graduated and was ordained in 2001. I started my first, I was ordained, as you know, with the United Church of Christ, you go through the entire ordination process, examination process as at the same time that you're doing your Master's of Divinity work. And I got both of those done about the same time. And, mm-hmm. but you also have to have a call to be right. ordained. So I'd gotten approved. My first call was actually, even I was going through the process with the United Church of Christ. I needed to find a call within a certain geographical area for family reasons. And my first call was with the Disciples of Christ, which is a sister denomination that we, it's easy to sort of be ordained in one and work in another. You right. can have your pension in either one. And as one mentor said, when the money's that close, you're pretty darn close. anyway, so I got my first call.
We like each other enough to put our money together.
Yeah. Okay. They thought about merging in the early 80s and decided to keep dating, but not get married, basically. Yeah. Yeah. So my first call was with the Disciples of Christ. I was ordained the end of August. I started on September 1st, and 10 days later, the towers fell. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was that like as a new minister? I was not a pastor then.
Yeah. It was another tumultuous time. I was in my office when someone came in to tell me that the second tower had been hit, and I hadn't known about the first one, but that mm-hmm. one tower had been hit, the plane had flown into the second tower, and it looked like it was not an accident, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. an attack. So it was a church where I was the associate pastor, permanent associate, but actually there was an interim senior pastor there. And that senior pastor did not handle the stress well, mm-hmm. Didn't know how to handle it well. Yeah. And he didn't last. And so I guess maybe, and I'm just saying this to you now, making that connection from then to now, maybe that's why I'm probably have my antenna up and looking for how do ministers handle stress right. and change. Right. His idea of how to handle the stress of that was to do more extracurricular activities that were good for him, but not great for the church. So, right. And it's not that it was terribly unhealthy. It was just that he just wasn't spending the time with the congregation that he needed to. Right. So they went ahead and released him. And so I was, as a brand new ordained pastor, was their solo person for 7 months of that first 9 months. Mm. And had some great things to it and was also stressful. So.
Well, and then that also means there's another transition for you to go through when the senior person then gets yeah. hired when you've been yeah. basically doing the work.
The new senior came on and seemed to be rather threatened by the fact that I knew the congregation well, that I was telling them about everybody, you know, in that first week. And I suddenly realized at one point, oh, I'm saying too much. I need to let him get to know it. And then I remember the first time I preached while he was there and coming out of the sanctuary and turning around and looking at his face. And it was like, oh crap, she can preach too. He started encouraging me to leave, shall we say. So I was only there at that church for a total of 2 years and then needed to find another place. And that's where I've been doing either interim or chaplaincy since. And have felt a real call of interim ministry.
Yeah.
So I've been working with groups and people during times of transition, change, and chaos. For a long time. So right now, actually, even though I don't technically have a call right now, I'm doing some research and some writing and a lot of reflection that I haven't had time to do for quite a while, because previously my position as interim has been in much demand, and I've often had one lined up right at, you know, sort of back to back with only a few days at most a week in between. And it is stressful to go.
Yeah, that's challenging.
To link with a congregation, to learn to love them well, and then say goodbye and immediately go to another place and say,
I can't even imagine doing that.
People aside in my heart and get to know another group. Yeah. Even though it wasn't planned for me to take a little time off, it's and it and there's a certain stress on not being connected to a church. It's also, I think God is taking care of me too, and preparing me for whatever is next.
Well, I do find it interesting that you mentioned earlier that maybe for the first time in quite some time, you would consider a settled pastorate. Mm-hmm. I know that's a term UCC uses. I'm not sure everybody else does, but but it's curious that you would consider that in a time where everybody is in transition. So it's almost like it's not something new that you're considering, but just signing on for more of it long term.
I know. The thing is, and that is something that I'm reflecting on too, because every time that I've been open for search, it's been very clear that I needed to take an interim. That those were the calls that were open at that time, that somebody absolutely needed what, you know, a person like myself, I'm not saying myself personally, but a person like myself who would take good care of them, who wasn't going to take advantage of the situation, try and manipulate things, you know, et cetera. So it seemed very clear that this was a ministry, this was a calling. And the times that I've interviewed for a permanent position, I've always gotten the question somewhere along the line, first in different ways, but spoken in different ways, saying, but why would you stay with us? You always move. And, you know, it's like, I haven't been given that opportunity in a sense. You know, it's hard to answer that question sometimes. Because, you know, there's part of me that thinks it would be lovely to be able to settle down and see people through a couple chapters of life, not just 1 year, or, you know, sometimes it's a year and a half or so, year and three quarters. But so I'd been thinking about trying to make that transition after this last call. But then with pandemic, it's like, maybe this is what I'm made for, is to keep doing this leadership in transition bit. So as someone who grew up faith-wise in the United Church of Christ, which tends to, or at least the church that I grew up tended to stress a whole lot more on free will than God's providence, being someone who's done interim and had to really rely on the providence of God of where is the next call coming from each and every year. So it's a struggle.
Well, of course, you're married to that Presbyterian minister. So
I know who I argue with theologically all the time. And it's like, wait a minute, but I do get, I could go into stories on that where it's like, I argue with God and then, you know, just what I need happens at just the right time. So after 19 years of this, I'm starting to go, okay, there may be some plans in there beyond the best ones that I make, because I think that I make great ones. And then
I think
what actually happens is better. So,
Well, I want to ask one last question, and it's a very open one. Is there anything about yourself, your ministry, or anything that we've touched upon that you thought, oh, I want to say more about that, and then we moved on? So is there anything you would like to add that you think we need to include in here that we haven't so far?
It's not a novel thought to myself, or an original thought to myself, but it's one that that I've been, that was shared at one seminar or something that I was on, that mm-hmm. I've shared with other people, is that at a time when there's a lot of energy spent on when do we get to go back to the way things used to be, that I think that we should look forward to what can be better. And as someone who has leaned a lot during my interim ministry, especially on you know, Isaiah's voice of God saying, behold, I am doing a new thing. Do you not yet perceive it? As horrible as, and there's a lot of things that are horrible about the pandemic, and justice wise, I could really go off on a rant on that. But there are, I think, to try to discern what God is wanting us to notice and what could be better. And what we can learn about connecting with people and creating community in different ways. So like, for instance, when I talked about that, you know, people would watch on Sunday, but then also watch on Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Oftentimes I've talked with congregations about, I know that we're all very comfortable with our Sunday morning worship, but if we don't make worship available at other times, at a different time other than Sunday morning, then we aren't making ourselves available to anybody who's working the gig economy. You know, because if you're trying to put a living together doing two or three different part-time jobs, you probably aren't going to have a reliable schedule that you know exactly when you're going to be free. And most likely it's not going to be free on Sunday morning. If you're working at a restaurant or a gas station or, you know, wherever it is, you're probably going to be not have that be a reliable time that you're off. And so we're not available to the part-time workers. We're not open to the part-time workers and to a lot of different people like that. And so to have an event like this, that's causing lots and lots of churches to go, oh, we can not only have a service that we are making available in the people can attend on with in their PJs in their living rooms or wherever, but they can also do it on their own time schedule. I mean, even my 84-year-old parents, my dad will watch my husband's service on Saturday night when it's available, and then he would watch mine on Sunday afternoon and their church service on Sunday morning. You know, so he could cruise through all three of them. I know. And these are the parents that, as I say, when I was growing up, were not active in church.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now they are. That's a whole nother story. But but to say that church can be available when it's convenient for you or when you need that Sabbath time. And so I've often you know, even this past month I was doing pulpit supply for a pastor friend of mine, a colleague, and you know, I'd say, and we're,
he may have
we're
pleased his wife was doing it.
yeah and so with that service as well as the one I was doing in Austin, I would say, and we're pleased to present this recorded service so that it is available for you when you need Sabbath time.
Yeah.
And we pray that this will be a good Sabbath time for you. So that's one thing that, as someone who has been in the business of trying to institute change, I'm looking at all this change going on around us, and not all of it is bad.
Right. Keeping the church open even more.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording.
Thank you.